Crossing to London now for Rob Hugh Jones from BBC World. Good morning, Rob.
Yes, good morning, Karen.
Yeah, that news just talking about Dennis Waterman. I'm sure that's big news in The Sun and the Daily Mail.
It is. It is. You know, those of us of a certain age remember Dennis Waterman very, very well in The Sweeney, and particularly in Minder, as your guests had there, and George Cole. I mean, they were a fantastic double act, weren't they? So yeah, we're sorry to see the back of Dennis Waterman. He had a fantastic career.
Yeah, icon. Well, in news this week, well, today actually, let's start with today's so-called victory parade in Moscow, and President Putin's given his speech. So what did he say?
Well, of course, we're used to these parades, this victory parade in Moscow every year in Red Square, the kind of resplendent backdrop of Red Square, and in the foreground, the dark green of the military vehicles and missiles and those very somber looking troops as they turn and salute their leader, President Putin, who's overseeing him. This is what we're used to every year. And this year we had something like 10,000 troops taking part, 130 pieces of military equipment, 77 planes and helicopters, and the planes flying overhead were flying in a Z formation, which of course is the symbol that Russian troops have been using in Ukraine. And there is the hint of just how significant this particular parade was, because we're looking out to see what Mr. Putin said about his intent in Ukraine. What he really said was the following. He said it was the right decision to go into Ukraine. He said that NATO, he blamed NATO. He said NATO was exploring lands close to Russia and that Ukraine might get nuclear weapons. Ironic, really, because Ukraine gave up nuclear weapons after the breakup of the Soviet Union. So to make that claim with no obvious evidence is an interesting one. And he also urged Russian soldiery to fight in the way that they had done so in World War II. So fight for what your predecessors fought for way back in the Second World War. So clearly Putin making that link between fighting the Nazis and liberating Europe back in 1945. And of course, Russia lost, well, the Soviet Union lost something like 27 million citizens, by far and away the largest of any country in World War II. So it's a very poignant thing for them to be looking back on. But it's interesting that Mr. Putin should make that link between today's fight against what he says are the Nazis in Ukraine. Remember, demilitarize and denazify Ukraine, and fighting the Nazis, the German Nazis and their allies back in 1945. So that's really what he said. What he didn't say was we're declaring war on Ukraine, because, of course, he calls it a special operation, not a war. We were kind of half expecting that. What he didn't do was hold any sort of victory lap in Ukraine itself. We thought maybe that might happen in Mariupol, but of course he hasn't got rid of the last defenders of that city yet. The Azov battalion still defend the steelworks there. So it was a more toned down version of what it might have been, and that's really what came out this morning.
Well, Rob, following on from that, later this week we may see Finland make an official bid to join the NATO military alliance. Why will the BBC be watching that so carefully?
Watching it very carefully, and it's very interesting, and that's because NATO, the Western Military Alliance, of course, has some 30 countries. Two countries up north, the Nordic countries in Scandinavia, Finland and Sweden, who help out NATO, but they're not members of NATO. They are neutral countries, they're non-aligned countries. But if you look at Finland, for example, it has a border with Russia of 830 miles, a huge land border with Russia. So if Finland joins NATO, the land border between Russia and the NATO bloc doubles immediately if that were to happen. So it's pretty significant that a country right on Russia's border should become a member of NATO. And of course, NATO is exactly what Mr. Putin has been pointing at as the kind of provocateur in all this. So ironically, there he is trying to turn back NATO, trying to push NATO back from the gates of Russia and from Russia's borders and from encircling Russia, that sort of paranoia that he feels, or critics say that he feels. Ironically, he's doing all of that. And yet, look, these two countries up north may well become the 31st and 32nd members of NATO. The Finnish president has suggested that a decision will be publicly made by May 12th, and that's this week. And that's why we're looking out for this week. I should just say one quick footnote, which is that Finland and Sweden are a bit anxious because if they join NATO very publicly, that will provoke Russia, no question. Russia has said it may move nuclear weapons to its enclave of Kaliningrad if that happens. So Finland and Sweden, this could be quite a provocative act. And also it needs ratification of all the existing 30 members of NATO, and that may take some time. So the two countries are saying, look, if we do apply, we want to join NATO very quickly. And that means that they would also be signing up to Article 5, meaning that any member of NATO that's attacked, every other country in NATO, including the two of them, would have to come to their assistance. So it's a big question of will it happen, will the application go in, and then how long will it take to be ratified?
When you say move nuclear weapons, you mean move them so they're aiming in their direction?
I think it's just it's a response. So whether this would happen or not, we don't know. I mean, Lithuania says that the Russians have already moved nuclear weapons back in 2018 into this enclave, this Russian-controlled enclave of Kaliningrad, a more threatening posture. So the question is, have they done that already? Is this an empty threat? Or is it a real threat? We don't know that.
Well, it may seem totally separate to what we've just been talking about, but the Eurovision Song Contest finals happen this coming weekend. So what's the link between that event and the ongoing war in Ukraine?
Not an obvious link, but here's where entertainment and geopolitics overlap a little bit, because normally, you know, Europeans and others will just watch the Eurovision finals every year and enjoy all the kind of cheesy music and glamour, razzmatazz and so on. This year's is in Turin in Italy, the 66th edition of the European Song Contest Finals. And of course, your listeners will probably know that every year different countries vote, and people in different countries can vote. They tend to vote for countries that they like, their allies, their neighbors and so on. And so we see this kind of political voting that's been going on for many years now, and it's people know about that. However, this year, Russia tried to join the Eurovision Song Contest. We want to be involved, they said. The organizers said yes, and then the organizers said no, and that's because they faced a big backlash from their decision after Russia went into Ukraine. So there's no Russian involvement, but there is Ukraine involvement, and of course, because of the huge sympathy across Europe for Ukraine, of course, we assume that the Ukrainian song, whatever its quality, will win hands down, because so many people in so many countries will vote for Ukraine. So that's why it's always an entertainment story, but this year a little more political than it otherwise would be.
Gee, yeah. And finally, two big political stories in Asia to keep an eye on this coming week, in South Korea and the Philippines.
Well, the Philippines is the big one. I think it's happening right now, a country of 110 million people, thousands of different islands. The extraordinary kind of color and pageantry of a Philippines election, we're seeing all of that. The polls close actually in about 6 minutes from now. And then we'll see what happens, because the people running in this election are characters, to use one word to describe them. Ferdinand Marcos Jr., known as Bongbong, the son of the late Ferdinand Marcos, who ruled the Philippines with an iron fist back in the 1970s. He, of course, his image certainly in the West is of a man who, took huge amounts of money. He and his family and his wife, Imelda Marcos, and her 3,000 shoes and all that sort of thing. But he's seen as having taken vast amounts of money out of the Philippines. Also imposing martial law in the Philippines, arresting, torturing, killing opponents and so on. So a very sort of bleak image of the man. And yet, look at this. You have a Marcos way out ahead in the polls, looks likely to win this election. So the dynasty, the families that have always dominated Philippines politics, it appears to be happening again. And it looks like we're on our way to another Marcos winning in the Philippines. And his running mate, by the way, is Sara Duterte, who is the daughter of the existing controversial president of the Philippines, Rodrigo Duterte, who people know so well for his very controversial war on drugs. So all kinds of characters involved in this, even Manny Pacquiao, the fighter, the boxer and entertainer, you know, he's on the running sheet as well for this. So a real pageant of an election. And the Philippines, they love their elections, huge turnouts normally, and we'll be watching carefully to see who actually wins this one.
Very good. Thank you very much, Rob.
Great. Thanks so much, Karen.
It's Rob Hugh-Jones from BBC World.